I'm Natalie.
And I'm Gerald.
Welcome to the Sweet Run Podcast.
Conversations with local passionate runners, because to run a city is to know a city.
There are three words that come to my mind when I think about this conversation.
What are they?
Smart, informative, and engaging.
I concur.
We are so honored to have Zoe Rome on the Sweet Run Podcast this week. Zoe is killing it in the running world. She is the editor-in-chief of Trail Running Magazine, as well as the managing editor of Women's Running Magazine.
Busy, busy, busy.
She's also a published author. She wrote a book with Tina Muir called Becoming a Sustainable Runner. And we dig deep into that book, as well as Zoe's own running journey. And what else?
Carbondale, Colorado, of course. This is where Zoe calls home, and it is so much fun and beautiful. It is Aspen adjacent, but stands on its own, so you need to add it to your running travel list.
I can't wait to visit Carbondale, but should we just do this? Let's get into it.
Let's go.
Well, Zoe Rome, welcome to the Sweet Run Podcast. We are so happy to have you.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
Yes, welcome, welcome, and we are looking forward to jumping into this awesome book that we got a chance to peruse and bend some pages and mark it up.
Oh, I know. Okay, Zoe, wait a minute. No. It's more than that. Like, I have so many pages dog-eared. I have so many pages highlighted, and there's just so much about this book that really spoke to me as a runner and as a person. And, you know, I have to say it was completely a different read than I expected. I wasn't sure what, you know, kind of what to expect. And then I started reading it and I couldn't put it down. And I kept saying to Gerald, like, oh my gosh, this point is so, like, this speaks to me so much. So thank you to you and Tina for writing this book.
Absolutely. I think that's been one of the most interesting and challenging and convicting things about putting this out in the world. Is I think we had a hypothesis about what might resonate with people or what would be really sticky. And I think, you know, especially with the title, we thought maybe people would gravitate towards the environmental stuff, which people have. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have really been digging into and like sinking their teeth into sort of the first third of the book about like how to sustain one's own running. So I think that's been really cool for me to see.
Yeah,
it's been so good. I was like, so many of these things, like as far as being a running coach myself and like working with other people with their running and just, you know, really wanting to be a lifelong runner and like, what does that look like? And like not burning yourself out in so many different aspects before you can even get halfway through your running career, you know, your running journey. So, but it was interesting. We were talking and we were like, there's so many things we want to talk to Zoe about, but I'm going to hand it to Gerald because he had a point that I thought would work well with our theme of running and travel. Yeah.
So, you know, well, let's just get into first, give everybody a little background on who you are. Because you have a lot of irons in the fire.
Yep.
And then I'm going to jump to about the last third of the book because it speaks to what amazing. We're doing on our podcast. But go right ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, just to speak to that, I originally got my start working in environmental journalism. So I've been really interested in how to storytell about the environment for many, many years. And through that work, I kind of came to the conclusion or like saw in my career that oftentimes the way to really connect with people on environmental stories is to use sports and the things that are really close to our hearts as a way to find out what people care about and to storytell to that around the environment, right? Like if you love travel, you love running, amazing. I have 100 reasons you should be really invested in environmental stewardship. They're going to speak directly to your concerns, your passions, your life experience. So that's kind of the overview of my career. But I'm originally from northern rural Arkansas. Did not grow up much of an athlete. Got into running in college. I was a late running bloomer, and just totally fell in love with it. Started running and most immediately kind of went to I had been working as a backpacking guide. So I got into trail running. And then I moved out to Boulder to get a degree in environmental journalism. And that really sort of like lit the fuse for pursuing trail running at sort of a different level. And now I work as the editor-in-chief at Trail Runner Magazine, the managing editor at Women's Running, and I'm also a coach at Microcosm Coaching, and just really passionate about how running can be a way for all of us to deal with the sticky, amazing, challenging parts of being a human here on planet Earth.
Okay. With that in mind, let's jump to chapter 12, because we are a running and travel, you know, entity, brand, podcast, all those things. And so, and you speak right to that, how to be a sustainable, eco-friendly traveler, because runners love to get out and, you know, and try all the races.
Yes, so specifically chapter 12, be an eco-conscious traveler. And I thought this really spoke to us a lot, because it's like, you know, runners are like, they're always traveling. It's like, okay, let's go travel for a race. Let's go to an event that has to do with running. And you know, it was really cool, because like one of the points that you guys brought up was explore close to home. And I felt like that spoke to us a lot, because we do like to travel, but at the same time with our schedules and kids, we like to explore close to home. And I'd love for you to like talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, a big thing for us is to really zoom out and put things in perspective of, we all know that travel comes with an environmental impact. There is a heavy carbon cost associated with travel. However, when you kind of put it into the perspective of the grand scheme of things, there's always going to be ways for us to cut down on our own carbon footprint, but it's not something we want to obsess over or get too focused on to the detriment of sort of engaging in this larger scale systemic action. So you'll notice we don't tell people to stop traveling. We're not being very prescriptive. We're inviting people to investigate how they do things now and to figure out where they might have the most room to challenge themselves and to grow into new habits that are more in alignment with their values. For me particularly, that means exploring close to home. I currently live in rural Colorado, which is an amazing place to fall in love with your backyard. And I think that there is a lower carbon cost associated with keeping your running a little bit closer to home. So that can be a way, if you are interested in reducing your personal carbon footprint, which isn't the end all be all, but is something we should all be thinking about to an extent, that staying local can really help with that. Secondarily, I think that forging a close emotional connection with your bioregion, the ecosystems, the land that you're most closely connected to now, can be a really amazing way to spur yourself to action down the road. Like if you have a close emotional relationship with where you are now, if you care for the communities that you're currently in, if they're like ecosystem communities, like think of the forests, the water systems that you currently explore, but also community in the human community, the non-human community, the non-living community, the animal communities that you're a part of. If you're connected to those, it will help you be a more potent environmental steward as well. So we really want to encourage people to get to know the areas that they're already moving through.
No, that's
such a good point.
That's super important. Because there's this whole lot I think we miss because we're so thinking about like the far off journey, right? You know, when it comes to travel, but there's a whole lot of journeys to be had right in your own backyard that go unnoticed and undiscovered. But I will say, if you could, let's flip the coin and we're on the West Coast and we want to go to Chicago Marathon. We want to go to Grandma's. We want to go to New York City Marathon, wherever it may be, or London, Germany, wherever the case may be. How can we think about being a eco-friendly traveler when, you know, there's a plane ride involved and there's going to be hotels and all these other things?
Yeah, I think, again, I don't want to take travel away from people, right? Like, you guys wouldn't be where you are without those amazing experiences and the people they connect you to and sort of the like other people's life experiences that can challenge you and help you get more in touch with yourself and sort of drive you to have the platform you currently have. So like, that's one reason I don't want to tell people like, you can't go to Berlin, you can't go to London. So I'm like, I actually really want you to go there so that you can be connected to this running community that will spur you to be a more active steward of this community down the line. So I think it's all about doing things more in alignment with your environmental values. So, you know, for me, sometimes that means like really assessing how in line with my environmental values is this trip? Like, if I'm going to go race, do a trail race in France, will it give me an additional opportunity to grow my platform and to speak to the environmental issues that I'm really passionate about? Mm-hmm. And will, like, because there's always trade-offs. So like, is maybe the carbon trade-off worth what I might be able to get in terms of growing my platform, meeting other people, enriching my own life experience? How can I do this in a way that's maybe a little more in line with my values? Can I maybe link it up with another trip, like if I'm, you know, was going to go to Austin for a conference, maybe I can link that up with a trip to see my family and cut down on maybe an additional flight for the year. How can I, you know, be more mindful about like sort of the logistics of travel? Can I cut down on driving? Can I take public transportation to the airport rather than a single passenger vehicle? Is there a way I can, through my eating choices, consume more mindfully? And I think, you know, again, it all is just about like deciding what your environmental values are and just being really strategic and figuring out like, should I be taking this trip? And if so, fine. Like, I don't need people to beat themselves up about that. I think it's so important to have these experiences and to travel, but it's just about deciding what your values are. And for me, like growing my platform and being in touch with the running community is a value to me. The community is a primary value for my life. So making sure that my travel aligns with that value and not like values of like, like there's a way a trip could be like the primary intent of the trip could just be to like, just not in line with those like true values. So I think it's just about assessing what your true values are and then using those heuristics to make more mindful and strategic decisions about travel in both big ways. Like, do I need to take this trip? And small, like, can I take the bus to the airport, or can I make sure that I bring reusable silverware and a water bottle on the flight to eliminate as much single-use plastic as possible?
Oh, that's a good point. What would you say would be a couple of key points that people could take away as far as like if they're staying in a hotel and if they want to reduce their carbon footprint there?
Yeah, well, I think the great news is that a lot of hotels are increasingly, they see that this is where the industry is headed. So they're getting more vocal about what their values are and what actions they're taking. So I would say rather than just Googling and seeing what the absolute cheapest place to stay is, maybe take an additional 5-10 minutes and do just a little bit more research to find a hotel or a lodging situation that's the most in alignment with your environmental values. Like, maybe there's a place that is really close to public transit. Maybe there's a place that has like a really cool LEED certification and is in a really like is in a green building. And, you know, also being mindful about things like the way that Airbnb or short-term rentals interact with building sustainable communities. For me, living in Colorado, housing justice is an issue that's very near and dear to my heart. So how do I make sure when I travel, I'm reflecting that value in my consumer habits? So I think it just comes down to, again, knowing what your values are and being willing to do just a little bit additional research. And if you're financially able, making sure your consumption habits are in line with those values you've identified.
Yeah, one thing I will say right off the bat is I appreciate the way that you phrase things as your environmental values, as opposed to stating in absolutes like this is the way and that is not the way. You know, I really appreciate that, because then it kind of speaks to, well, how do we educate people? How do we inform, enlighten people that they make those choices for themselves and their environmental values change over time?
Right. And I think that particularly, I think making it reflective of values invites more people in. Again, I'm from rural Arkansas, and I've always felt that a lot of the times my community's challenges weren't reflected in environmental conversations, like socioeconomic justice, housing justice, food justice. I think that, you know, you could be a vegan on Twitter yelling at people that they shouldn't eat cheese and shouldn't drink milk, but you doing that doesn't actually do anything to create a system where people have the economic privilege and ability to make those values aligned decisions, right? So I'm all about like, how do we reframe this to help people identify those values? And once you've identified them, how do you build a system that enables, equips, and empowers all people to do so?
Sure. Mm,
good point. What are your thoughts on Airbnb and housing justice? Because I find more and more I hear people really getting upset about the Airbnb situation, and that they feel like over time that it's taking away housing inventory for people who need it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's challenging, but I'll give the context that I now live in rural Colorado, where housing affordability and access is a major challenge, particularly in mountain towns in Colorado, which are places like that are hot travel destinations. Like, these are places I do want people to come and visit. Their economies are heavily reliant on visitors and travel. And again, like, I'm not going to stop traveling anytime soon, and I'm not going to tell other people they need to stop traveling anytime soon. I don't believe it. The data doesn't support it. But I am going to encourage all of us to do it as mindfully as possible. So what we're seeing, particularly in Colorado, is increasing policy and regulation of these short-term rentals to either, like, if you are going to rent something out, and this is kind of the sort of the direction I'm leaning to, is how do we, acknowledging that these things, there is a demand for it, how do we regulate it in a way that helps support a more sustainable community down the line? Like, in areas near where I live, for folks that have these short-term rentals, typically that means someone who already has a primary property where they live and they're renting out a secondary property. So, like, they're doing fine. They have a house, they have two houses, they have more than two houses. How do we build a tax structure that means we can take money from those short-term rentals and put that into a sort of programming that encourages housing justice, housing equality? Like, in where I live, we take money that's taxed on short-term rentals, goes into building and developing affordable housing and or like affordable housing voucher programming. And that's something that I'm, again, I think it has to, typically communities are really good at deciding what's a good fit for them. But I think that anything that assesses that, like, is premised from a place of justice and also being like us as people, like, on the demand side of the market. I think that just doing a little more due diligence, like maybe not using short-term rentals in an area where you know that that is causing a housing crisis situation.
Yeah.
Oh, which is tough, right? Like, that's oftentimes, it's really convenient, it's really affordable. So again, I would encourage folks that have the financial ability, maybe spend a few extra dollars and do so in a way that is, again, in line with whatever values you've identified in yourself as being the most important.
I really appreciate that, because I find in these mountain towns, I've been reading more and more that, like, the people that come, that actually work at the resorts, that work in all of these tourist type places, have gotten to the point where they can't afford to live where they work, and they have to commute long distances because of affordability. And now with short-term rentals, it's like there's no housing available for them.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, again, like, zooming out from, like, how does travel fit into all of this? Like, if we, when folks aren't able to live in the communities where they work, you're pushing them further away. And that is an increased carbon footprint. Whereas, like, maybe you fly to, I live near Aspen. So if you fly to Aspen for a weekend, sure, there's a little bit of carbon associated with that flight. It's honestly not huge in the grand scheme of things. But let's say you stay in an Airbnb that has caused a family to move 30 miles away. Well, every day, people from that family have to go 60 miles to and from their place of work to their home. So again, I'm trying to push people to think outside of, like, sure, there's this sort of superficial carbon cost associated with the flight to Aspen, but what other decisions are you making that have these huge downstream carbon footprint impacts? And I think that short-term rentals and housing affordability, housing justice, like housing justice is something I believe in on just like a human to human sort of basis. But B, it's an environmental issue as much as it is a human issue.
So, I mean, because that's really, I feel very passionate about that. So would you say, Zoe, like, if that's something that means something to me or someone else, that the best thing to do would be, like, just get a hotel?
Yes. I think, again, it's like very community specific, but at least in a lot of places in Colorado, increasingly short-term housing is being regulated, so it is kind of stabilizing, but hotels are regulated and taxed in a way that already that money goes back into the community, and already, like, again, just to use Aspen as the most specific example, because that's near where I'm located. Hotels are already like, and the development of hotels, commercial development is taxed in a way that like, if you build, let's say you put in a hotel that has 10 beds, for every 5 beds, you have to build 1 bed of employee housing. So, and again, like, I think this is about to stabilize and will make the short-term rent, like when short-term rentals become more regulated, that will sort of take the onus off the consumer to make those decisions. And we'll put it on the policymakers to make sure that like, to do all the hard thinking and math for us so that you can just travel to Aspen and stay wherever like Google identifies as being the cheapest place. And you can just know that someone else has put a lot of thought and research into this, which is kind of my hope, because clearly I love to go deep and get nerdy about this stuff, but wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to and someone else did?
No, I agree with you. I want to go back just a little bit and talk about the genesis of this book that you and Tina Muir wrote. And I want to ask you, you know, just about like how the two of you met and how did the idea for the book come to fruition?
Yeah. So we actually, I think it's the cutest friendship story I've ever heard. We met tweeting at each other about compost. I had years ago, I think it was during the pandemic, I was living in a little studio apartment and my compost was getting a little bit stinky. And so I was tweeting, trying to see if anyone had any solutions for what to do about living in a tiny apartment and having very stinky compost. And Tina chimed in with some amazing advice about how to up the carbon, like the amount of like carboniferous material in my compost to make it less smelly. And it worked. And I was like, I need to know more about this lady. One of the reasons we're into composting was as a way of like investigating and minimizing our own sort of footprint. And I realized we were both trying to have hard conversations about sustainability, the environment, justice in the run space. So we just started being someone that the other could call on when like, I'm wrestling with this tough question. What do you think about my approach? Or like, do you think I'm falling short here? Like, what's your input? And Tina had already kind of been thinking about a book concept for a little bit. And she brought me on because of my journalistic and writing experience. Like she has the sort of like mass communication expertise. And she has been working in the sustainability run space for a while, but she wanted to bring me on as sort of the like hard-nosed journalist to help build out that side of the book project. And it's kind of just been an amazing, perfect collaboration ever since.
I can't think of two people that would be matched so well as the two of you with both of your backgrounds and expertise. How long did it take you to write this book?
A long time. We started during the pandemic and it just got published in August. There was a good bit of research that went into this and, you know, I had originally written it started it during the pandemic when my job responsibilities at Women's Running and Trail Runner were a little bit different and sort of stepped into some new leadership roles in my career, which made it so that I was essentially writing the book at nights and on weekends. But again, I'm just really grateful for Tina, who has just got incredible project management skills that I don't have. I can get really in the weeds and nerd out on the research, but Tina knows how to get things done kind of from soup to nuts. And I'm really grateful for her approach there. And I, you know, writing a book is like, I'm a professional writer. That's all I do every day. And it's hard, even if that's like your jam, it's a tough thing just because of the scale of it. And we really wanted to, even though like having a co-author is amazing because you're already starting with more than one perspective, but it was really important to us that we prioritize other people's voices, stories, and perspectives at every step of the way.
Yeah, I appreciated that the two of you getting other perspectives and, you know, you can tell that you both are so passionate about the sport. And I definitely took that away as I was reading it. I was like, man, these are two people that really love the sport. You know I love it. And I can feel that in this book. One of the things that stood out for me was perfectionism. Perfectionism is the enemy of sustainability. I wrote this down because it really spoke to me and it said, you know, why do people, one of the things I felt like was like, why with perfectionism, why do people struggle so much with that? And like one particular tidbit is like, why do people struggle with running easy? paces. I think that's something that we talk about more and more, something that I think about a lot as a coach of athletes. And I find that it's very difficult for people to run easy. And I think, yeah, that's something that I've wanted to dig into more and more, the psyche of why that's so difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Any recovering perfectionists in the house? anyone else? But it's true. Like there is so much messaging that we encounter day in, day out in the world is premised on us not being enough, not being good enough, not looking the right way enough, not being woman enough or man enough or whatever gender that we identify with enough. There's no right way to be. And that's hard for us to internalize and hear and be exposed to day in, day out, right? Like there's also a lovely sort of evolutionary side of our brain that forever and ever has been very driven to want more, more, more as a way of keeping us alive. So it's kind of this perfect storm of like our brain's software is pretty slow to update and marketing is very quickly updated to sort of like exploit the weaknesses of our human brains. And I think that creates a context where, again, like particularly folks of like different identities, marginalized identities, are increasingly pushed to perform perfection in ways that aren't helpful. So I think that it's sort of like a confluence of cultural and biological factors. But I think a lot of that comes out to play in running, in like a lot of folks get into running for different reasons, but many people stay in running for sort of performance and health goals. And those can be really, really healthy things. But sometimes like that drive for performance can make it really challenging to on the days when it matters to run easy, right? Like so much of the messaging in the running world is no pain, no gain. It's like the David Goggins, like go hard or go home.
I was just going to say. Really,
yeah. If you're listening, David, get in touch. And I think that, that messaging can serve some folks, but I think a lot of us aren't served by that, because I think for a lot of us, it's actually easier to hold on to and white knuckle our way towards imaginary perfection. And it actually takes great discipline and great self-awareness to run easy, right? Like I'm sure as a coach, you have to do a lot of education with athletes around like the physiological reasons we do not run at lactate threshold every day. And it's tough. Like I think some people, like for many, many folks, particularly anyone who's like, I mean, running at our levels, like it genuinely takes more discipline to do less and to do it easier than it does to like push through, go hard, no days off, no pain, no gain. Yeah. Like I think for a lot of us, that's maybe our natural inclination. Like I'm challenged by rest and going easy, but it gets easier when you like do it and you feel better and it like works on the scale of years and you're like, oh my God, this is great. I'm like not injured and tired all the time.
I agree with you. I feel like this has been plaguing me a little bit. Like I feel like, and I know it's so much more than the numbers, but let's just say like if you take an elite runner, okay, who's running 5:15 pace per mile for a marathon, and it doesn't feel like it would be that it's that difficult for them from what I've heard people say to run 7:15 per mile for an easy run. But if you take an amateur runner who's running 8-minute pace for their marathon race, and then they should be running their easy recovery runs at 10 minutes per mile. There's something about that barrier where I feel like people are like, oh my gosh, there's no way I can run 10 minute pace. Like that to me is not being, I'm not performing, but there's something about that barrier that they cannot get over.
Yeah, well, shout out to Kipchoge, who does his recovery days at 9-minute pace. Whenever I find myself going too easy or going too hard on easy days, I'm like, no, 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 you don't go faster than Kipchoge. That's not what we're here for. So if he can do it, we all can, right?
That's right.
And I think, you know, like there's some like obvious, like, I think I actually remember reading one time, like just to get like super nerdy with my fellow coaches here, that like you have to actually be fairly fit to run slow well, right? Like you still have to be able to like sort of have the like physiological adaptations that allow you to adopt proper form while running a 10, 11, 12 minute mile. And I think that it just like on the form level, like you have more ground contact time and it can just like feel a little bit actually like physically harder. And I think mentally as well, the way it feels in your body, it doesn't look like the gorgeous like gazelle images you see of people in like fancy running shoe ads or like running the Chicago Marathon. So I think it's like I think it's partially like some physiological adaptations, and the fitter you get, the easier it does become to run slow. And may we all be like Kipchoge rocking 9 minute recovery miles. And I also do think that like mentally and emotionally as well, like we want to be the very smooth, perfect, flawless, gazelle-like runners. And you just have to have the courage to sit in that gap between what you want to look and feel like. And you know what? Probably no one feels that sexy on their recovery days, and that's okay. We just have to make peace with some shuffling.
I like that. Courage. You have to have the courage. It does take courage.
It takes courage.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, as someone who's trying to gain consistency, I will go out and run. And the first thing Natalie will ask, Coco, how did it go? And I was like, you know, and I'll start spouting off what my mile times were. And she's like, who cares? Just be consistent. And I'm like, no, well, yeah, no, no. I was really running slow. It's like, I'm always now, I'm like trying to prove that I was running slow, you know?
Yes.
But I
really think that's helpful though.
Yeah, but I still want a negative split.
And I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's just,
she's like, it just don't.
You're like getting back into your groove and it doesn't matter. But anyway, that's a whole, we could talk about that forever.
But I think like setting up those systems where we validate when we're doing the right? Because like Strava is amazing at giving us that like hit of dopamine and that validation when we have like a super fast, amazing, sexy run. But like, I want to see more systems where we can like give each other kudos for going slow AF.
Yes.
That would actually be a good feature. That's a good point. Yeah.
And I think maybe that has to do with one of the reasons why I'm not on Strava.
Smart.
I just feel like that's one more element of social media that I'm like, there's just one more thing, you know, to compare or look or feel like, for many reasons where, you know, people know where I run or just my pay. And I'm like, I just don't know if I'm ready for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, and this is something we talk about a lot in the book, is like knowing yourself and setting those guardrails and boundaries so that you can thrive. And those look different for everyone. And they can look different across a season or even a week of your running career. Like there's definitely been times where I'm like, I'm taking a full stop. Like I don't need to be on Instagram. I don't need to be on Strava. I need to really moderate my like personal media diet. And there's been other times where that looks different. So I think it like having that self-awareness and again, having the courage to assess and set those boundaries for yourself is totally game-changing when it comes to making sure that your training reflects your values and not the values of your friends from high school or the algorithm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So how do you, because you talk about community as a part of being able to sustain yourself along with fun and all these other challenges and very, you know, variety. So how do you thread the needle between having community, but not getting caught up in the judgment, the, you know, comparison of the community that you value?
Oh my gosh, Gerald, that is such a good question. And I think it kind of, it gets to what we were just talking at, and I'm going to tie it all back to values again, is I think that I think you have to know what your real, you really have to know and be able to stand in integrity in what your values are, and then align yourself with communities that have those same values. And that's not going to be all communities, and that's okay. For me, I've noticed there's a lot of communities online, particularly that don't reflect my values. So I just, you know, I rain check out of there. And I often find that, you know, sometimes those online communities become like very insular and echo chambery and start to just sort of like reflect back to itself, not always the most positive aspects of that community. I find this is something that can exist, but exists less in like real in-person community, just because humans are so lovely when you hang out with them in the actual real world. And I think that it's so much easier to get a clear understanding of what values are sort of in real spaces. Like I'm a big fan of group runs. I think that again, like connect, like in a lot of times those, you know, like group runs that happen in the real world are premised on the shared value of like shared affection for geography. Like you live in the same place, you love the same community, you love the same city, the same forest, wherever your group run is. And a lot of times that can even be enough. Or you have a training group where you have a shared value around excellence and amazing. That's an amazing community that you can connect with that hopefully plays up the most positive aspects of yourself, and you can connect on that shared value of excellence. So I think it really comes down to like figuring out which communities are the most in alignment with your values. And it's okay to just you can't and don't need to be a member of every community. That's normal and healthy, and figuring out which ones like, and if you have the information that a certain community doesn't reflect your values, it's okay to take a little pause. It's okay to set a boundary. Those things are great and normal, and it will just free up bandwidth and space for you to pursue a community that does reflect and respect your values.
Sure.
And I think for me, like thinking about community, not only in person, but like online, and I know you touch upon this in the book a little bit, is like being able to walk away and feel good. Right? Like not feeling like, man, that didn't make me feel good about myself, or I don't feel
adequate.
Yeah. Adequate. And I think that when we start to feel those things, and that's when we have to start to say, I have to separate myself and like protect my boundaries. Cause you know, this is supposed to be fun. We choose this and it's supposed to be bring joy to our lives. So we need to remember to keep that and step away if that's not happening, I think.
Exactly. And again, I think that takes great discipline and courage and self-awareness to assess like, this may not be for me. I'm going to take action because of that. Like that, again, like that's not always easy. And just, you know, kudos to everyone who is able to sort of, reclaim that time and space for themselves. And it's, again, like maybe you can revisit it down the line and something has changed and you're getting different information, but you know, we can't all be everything to everyone. And it's always okay. Like if you are like, you know what, going to this group run doesn't make me feel awesome about myself, it doesn't make running feel more fun, great. There'll be another group run that does, or start your own.
Yeah, there you go. Well, before we like to talk the second half about travel, and I'm very excited to talk about where you live in Colorado, but I want to dig in just a little bit about, I mean, you have a very big two jobs that are like impressive and have a huge responsibility. So I want to talk about, so you're editor-in-chief of Trail Running Magazine. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. That is incredible. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that role.
Yeah. So I had actually been working for NPR and living in Aspen and was feeling a bit burned out. My schedule as a radio journalist was really, really demanding. And I was challenged by a lot of anxiety that made it really hard for me to sleep. So I had some like health issues that were related to just kind of being like a really young early career journalist. And so Trail Runner Magazine at the time was based out of Carbondale, which is where I live now, which is near Aspen. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to put my name in the hat for an assistant editor position and see where it goes. I love running. I like writing. I'm a journalist. This seems great. And I had kind of been looking, I liked Carbondale, essentially. Like I kept meeting people from there and people seemed really creative and interesting and balanced and athletic. And like, again, a lot of shared values. So I was like that, I just want to live somewhere where I feel like I can like really sustain a life. And so I became the assistant editor, worked my way up to associate, then senior editor, then editor in chief, right when the pandemic happened. So that was very exciting and a big learning curve for everyone in digital media. Purely in the running industry, things are changing quickly, a lot of times in really good ways. And so being a part of that was great. And sort of on the back end of the pandemic, I was invited to also be managing editor at Women's Running, which I'm just very passionate about, you know, inviting folks of all genders into the run space. Like it's been a really transformative thing, a really positive transformative thing in my life. And so it's a big part of my why and my mission to create a world where all folks are actively invited and equipped, empowered, encouraged to experience that same thing if it speaks to them. And I think that a lot of times women's journeys along those lines are pretty specific and again, folks of all genders. I particularly think women's, the way I think about women is a political category where anyone can self-identify as such. And a lot of things that we speak to journeys of folks of all marginalized genders. So just inviting, speaking to that specific experience through storytelling, journalism, profiles is really exciting for me.
That's awesome. So now with these two huge jobs, how do you find the time to go on your runs?
It sounds like such a cliched life hack, but I literally just have like a Google Calendar block so that no one will schedule meetings with me during that time. So I just like plan ahead, set time aside. It took me, like when I was earlier in my journalism career, I really struggled with like saying, oh, no, I don't want to do this at that time. I'm usually running at that time because I struggled with owning my athletic career because I'm not like a professional athlete, even though it's something that's very near and dear to me. It took me a bit of while, a little time and encouragement from particularly other women that I worked with to be like, no, take that time for yourself. It will make you more effective. And whether or not you're training to, you know, win Boston, or you just need to do it for your mental health and you got to get outside and your dog needs to get outside. Both things are equally valid. Everyone is deserving of that time and space to take care of themselves in that way. So knowing that you're important enough to set that time aside and communicating openly and honestly with people around you. I've found that whenever I've like told a colleague like, hey, I would love to meet with you, this isn't a good time for me, I'm usually running, then they're usually like really amenable and they're flexible as well. So like not making it my like scheduling always my problem and always being the first person to compromise and bend, sort of sussing out and inviting other people to build trust with me through compromise is nice as well. And then another thing, like I'm just a huge, and you'll probably picked up on this in the book, I'm a huge proponent of sleep. Getting enough sleep is really helpful. Like if there's something to skimp on in your life, it's not sleep. Yeah. So I feel like there's a lot of like messaging around like the hustle, wake up, rise and grind. I do not rise and grind. I sleep.
I love not a rise and grinder. To hear that. I am so all about my sleep as well. Yes. And you know, sometimes it feels easier than other times, but yeah, it's so important. Are you training for anything right now? Like what's going on with your running?
Yeah. So I ran a 100 miler about a month ago. So I'm still kind of in the recovery build back phase from that. Hundreds are hard. I'll say it. It's kind of hard. And my body, I was a little bit tired for a little while. So I'm kind of focused on, I feel like I've now gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm healthy. I'm back at like my baseline level. I'm excited to build some speed and take not like an off season, but a season where running for competitive reasons is less prioritized, focus on some cool work projects and build speed, do some road running. I might do a road marathon this spring. I've never done one.
Whoa.
That's I know. Cool. Yeah, I just want to get a little faster. And as an ultra runner, it's what we know as lottery season. So I have my name in the hat for a few different big 100 milers next year. So just kind of waiting to see if my name gets pulled for anything fun and exciting. Lay down like a winter of cool speed work. And then I always like to travel in the spring before like summer is pretty. Working in running media, summers are big on time. I went to South America for the first time last spring and I really, really want to go back. So that's my like travel goal, is to find a cool race in South America.
Okay.
Nice.
Which country?
Yeah.
Or countries?
I went to Argentina. My partner lived in Argentina for a while. So we went to go see we went to go race near where he used to live. And it's really cool to experience a place that someone else knows enough of, like has some context to. And the people there are just amazing. I loved the food. It was like a 30-hour travel adventure to get there. But I also really love like getting to know other people's run cultures, particularly ultra running culture. It's like, oh my gosh, these people are all just like me. We're all wearing the same goofy clothes. And just to see how other places do ultra running is just so cool for me. I love learning from other people and other cultures.
That is so cool. Which, yeah. I have to ask, which 100 miler did you race?
I did Run Rabbit, which local. It's just a couple hours away up in Steamboat Springs. And I just loved it, man. I don't know. I've like, so for 10 days, I did like a little DIY boot camp to train for it. And I had never spent much time in Steamboat. If you're looking for a place to travel to, Steamboat in the off season is pretty affordable and really fun.
Okay. Ooh, that's good to know. We're always looking for that.
I was like, this is great Colorado beta.
Nice.
Yeah, we got to find a runner in Steamboat to give us all the local goods.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love what you said about, you know, going with your partner to Argentina and getting that local perspective with someone who has familiarity. So we'd like to do the same with you.
Yeah. Awesome.
If you haven't checked out Zoe's new book that she co-authored with Tina Muir, I highly recommend it. It's called Becoming a Sustainable Runner, A Guide to Running for Life, Community, and Planet. I read the book in about 2 days. It is dog-eared and highlighted, and it is very well written, so you must check it out. Also, a big shout out to our longtime sponsor, Inside Tracker. Go to our landing page, insidetracker.com/sweetrun, and at checkout, use the code SWEETRUN to save 25% off. It is still January. It's still the new year, you guys. It is not too late to really reach out and grab those goals with the help of Inside Tracker. You just get a blood draw and they take care of everything else. And now let's get back to our conversation with Zoe as she shares the best of her hometown of Carbondale, Colorado. Yeah, yeah. Tell us about where you live. So now, are you in Carbondale or Aspen or somewhere in between?
Yes, I'm in Carbondale. I've been here since 2019, and I love it. I love talking about it. I do want everyone to come here and visit because I think it is an amazing place.
All right.
Nice. Okay, so now, all right, well, you've sold us. We're coming to Carbondale to go on a run. Where would you send us?
For a run.
So, Well, I would say come to the, we have a local group run at the Run Store every Thursday, rain or shine. And we can get like anywhere, we can get upwards of 40, like this is a town of 7,000 people and we get 40 runners showing up to our group run. So, and it really is like the most like all paces welcome group run I've ever been to. Such a fun vibe. And we do a little loop around town. I'll also say like, we have great bike and running paths in Carbondale, particularly training through the winter here. I think it's a great place to live and train, or to like, if you want to do a runcation, you can do amazing runs in town, not have to worry with traffic. We actually have 2 stoplights in town, so traffic isn't really a big issue for us regardless. But I just love a town that has like infrastructure that prioritizes my running needs. And that would be like for a short run in town, amazing bike path. There's a really famous sort of 17-mile loop just outside of town called the Catherine Store Loop, where we have a few pro runners in town. That's where they'll train in the winter for folks who are, you know, like training for Western States or Golden Ticket races in the spring, where you get amazing views of 14ers and you can just cruise amazing plowed roads while looking at this incredible like skyline of jagged mountain peaks covered in snow. You can think about how all your friends are skiing powder while you're doing your long run on a Saturday. And we have good food. We have good food in town. So it's like the perfect place for, you know, like if you want to train to run year round and you want to do other stuff, like biking is really big here. Mountain biking is huge. You can ski, you can ice climb, you can uphill ski all within a 20-minute drive of Carbondale.
Ooh, nice. That sounds like a beautiful place to live.
And we have lots of cross-country skiers that live here as well.
Yeah.
I'm a big I like that. That's my ski.
I'm getting into it. It's like the best cross training.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge.
I do too. I love it. And I don't have to worry about like falling down and getting injured.
That's it. Oh my God. Same. every time I like am downhill skiing, I'm like, is this as fun as having a healthy ACL? I'm not sure.
Exactly. That's why I choose cross-country skiing. Okay, so now would love to check out the local food scene. Mm-hmm, so where would you send us to get some good food? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, all the things.
Yeah, so my favorite breakfast in town, we have a deli called Plosky's that does amazing coffee, and they have incredible like deli style bagel sandwiches. My favorite is called Carrot is a Fish, which is like a vegan take on a lox bagel, which is delicious. Maybe a little fibers for a pre-long run deal, but an amazing brunch option. One of our other great restaurants that's like perfect for breakfast or lunch is the Village Smithy. I think it's one of the oldest restaurants in Carbondale. And it's it used to be an old like blacksmithing place that has been transformed into an amazing sort of like lunch restaurant. Also does great coffee, great scrambled tofu for the vegetarians out there, and just like a really fun sort of like down home cooking situation.
Okay. Nice. Okay. So Zoe, we are newly or somewhat newly vegan. Gerald and our son are vegan. I am vegan-ish.
That's same. I'm like mostly.
Mostly. Yeah. So I love, I could tell that you're, you know, I could tell that about you. And I was like loving these food options because I feel like now, like we cook obviously a lot at home and we're very careful about like what we make. And I always think about like, okay, if we're out or we're traveling, like how do we find restaurants that cater to our lifestyle?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Coming from rural Arkansas, vegan options back there are fairly limited, but I think increasing, like I live in a fairly small town in Colorado, but I think most places here have like a, have at least a couple like really solid options.
Okay.
Which just to go back to Argentina for a second.
Yeah. How okay. Yeah. A tougher Argentina? Place.
Cause that's like a steak place, right? They're like big on their beef and cowboy. Yep. And so how did it go without the meat? Yeah.
Ate a lot of pasta. Which like great before a race. And the area that we were staying in for our race is called Las Pampas, which is like sort of an effluvial plain in the middle of the country. So like, yes, beef is still a big part of what they do there, but there's also a lot of German heritage there. So they had a lot of pastas and like pizza type things. So like pretty like run of the mill, like runner friendly, carb centric options.
All right. Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't sure, but I was thinking,
you're like, is she doing asadas? Book, like,
yeah. I'm like, she might not be much of a, you know, meat eater. So how did that go in Argentina? But cool. That good to know. So now we need somewhere to lay our heads. Where in Carbondale, what are some of the better options to be sustainable and have a great place to stay?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a really cute, guest ranch just outside of town called the Avalanche Ranch. I believe they're cabins and they're located on a natural hot spring. So after you go do your long run, always amazing to unwind and get a soak in. They do massages there and the lodgings are really cute cabins of all different sizes. So you can always like, it's sometimes just nice to have like the shared space of a kitchen. So you can do a little bit of your own cooking or at least have amazing post-run snack options. And a little more space than just a traditional hotel room. And you're overlooking the Avalanche Valley and you get to look out over all these mountains. And it's a really beautiful little special part of our town. And again, nothing beats a natural hot spring soak at the end of the day.
Yeah. I love.
That's always a good thing.
Love that.
Yeah.
We forgot to ask you, even if we're vegan, I still have a little bit of a sweet tooth. So do you have a place to go in town to get a little dessert? Mm,
absolutely. There are there's a couple places. One of my favorites is Bonfire Coffee. They have a bakehouse and they do also a great breakfast, but amazing pastries and more sweet treats. There's also a brand new bar that just opened up that has some options for the end of the day called the El Dorado. So for an upscale cocktail and sort of end of day nightcap, that's a great place too.
Nice.
Love it.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned that your group run meets at a running store. Mm-hmm. So that leads us to what's the name of the running store?
Yeah. It's called Independence Run and Hike. And it is such an amazing place for, I mean, it does run specialty really, really well. They also have a lot of other like outdoor offerings in the winter. They're also a cross country ski shop. It's run by and managed by amazing local runners who are super passionate about the community and serving the community. And I think that that's something that really sets it apart as a shop, is that it's like truly by runners for runners. And just a really cool place to hang out. Super welcoming.
Nice.
Love it.
Okay, so races in Carbondale or around, what would you recommend if someone wanted to come and race?
Yeah. So I would say, this one's closer to Aspen, but the Golden Leaf Half Marathon, net downhill half marathon on very smooth trail during peak Aspen color changing season. So you really get to run through like a tunnel of like bright yellow Aspen trees. It's amazing. It's a great, like, if you want to do a really fast half marathon, it's a great option. But if you're curious about trying out your first trail race, that's also a great option because it's just not, it's a pretty beginner friendly trail because that net downhill can be pretty nice for prioritizing experience. Where actually there's not currently a trail race in town, but Independence Run and Hike is working on getting the first one started for next year. So something awesome to look forward to.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is the elevation in Carbondale?
6,200. So okay, it's a little, it's not Leadville, but it's a little, you might get a little breathless if you're from sea level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure. Okay.
And now, is there something that we should not miss before we leave town? Whether that could be environmental, whatever, what do we not want to miss?
That's a great question. I mean, I would say just looking up at Mount Sopris, wherever you are, we have a mountain in town that's almost 13,000 feet tall. So it's very prominent. And it's technically, it's like in our zip code, it's in town. And you can see it from almost anywhere. So I would say just like wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whether you're in the Safeway parking lot or you're out on an amazing trail run, stop and look up at Mount Sopris and think about how lucky we all are to be here.
Okay.
That sounds like beautiful. So yeah, good.
You can hike Mount Sopris. I like just looking at it.
I like that. I'm going to go with looking at it. Yeah. Maybe the half marathon race.
And looking at the mountain.
And looking at.
And then yes.
And taking
and soaking in the hot spring and looking up at the mountain.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. Soap. That's perfect.
Recovery. Important.
So important. So do you think you're going to write any more books?
Yeah, I definitely would like to. Actually, pivoting off our conversation earlier about mountain towns and housing, I'd be curious. I'm currently working on an idea related to sort of sustainability in the modern outdoor recreation industry.
Nice. Okay. All right.
I think like after the pandemic, we've seen a lot of things. Just kind of curious to explore. To look at the outdoor industry through the lens of sustainability, not just environmental, but again, social, housing justice, issues like that.
I think people will be very interested for all the reasons that we talked about earlier and so much more. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Zoe, this has been such a treat. Yeah. It's so nice to meet you. I've heard so much about you and seen the things that you're doing, but it's so nice to connect. So thank you
guys
for doing
too.
This.
I'm so excited to tune in. I love that you guys are making space for cool, challenging, exciting conversations about travel. Keep up the amazing work.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And speaking of which, we always ask our guests the final question, which is, if you could run anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
Probably Chamonix, France, because the mountains are amazing and I love a croissant.
Ooh, that's a good,
I want to do steep trails and eat pain au chocolat all day. That's all I want.
Okay.
That sounds perfect.
I'm with that. Yeah.
Where can everybody find you, follow along on your adventures and all the things?
Yeah. So you can find my byline on Outside Online, Trail Runner Magazine, Women's Running Magazine. And you can find me on Instagram at @carrot_flowers_z.
Okay, you have to tell us where that handle came from.
It's from a Neutral Milk Hotel song. I've had the same Instagram handle since I was in college. So, and then I just kept it because I was like, I don't need people to like conflate this with my like actual, like I liked that it was like intentionally not my name.
Right.
I mistakenly thought that would limit people's ability to find me back in the day. Now I think it just helps me like preserve a bit of distance between like this is my online persona. It like that, it makes it easier for me to not conflate my own brain with like what's online.
There you
like
go.
It's intentionally that. Silly and not the same thing as Zoe.
Yeah, that's cool. No, that's awesome. Well, everyone, go buy this book, Becoming a Sustainable Runner, A Guide to Running for Life, Community, and Planet. Zoe, thank you. I can't wait to meet you someday in person.
Yeah. And oh my gosh, I'm sure that we'll bump into each other at a marathon someday. Doing, or something sure. cool out in the world. Thank you guys so much for so many thoughtful questions. It was so fun to chat about all things serious environmental and travel and just nerd out about running.
Yeah.
I know. Nerding out about running is literally the best.
It's the best. Yep.
All right.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Zoe Rome, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your perspective on sustainable travel as we go out and do all of our races and see the world. And you really shared with us how we can enjoy that process and not feel like we're depriving ourselves of anything in those ventures. You made it clear that we won't be deprived of anything in Carbondale, Colorado. The running, the nature, and the food sounds amazing. Go follow Zoe on Instagram at @carrot_flowers_z.
Hey friends, you know what will help us to grow our show even more in 2024? It's pretty simple. Share the show, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast content. That will help new listeners find our show. Follow us on social media. Sweet Run, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Nat Runs Far, you can follow me anywhere. Follow me at Nat Runs Far. And as always, thank you to our sponsor, Inside Tracker. Thanks so much for listening, you guys, and we will see you next week.